Petition number 11223, Rule 3.
Mr. Howard, Rule
3.
And he would, in fact, give them the map identification from the pinpoints that I would try to produce, actually looking at where, in fact, the German armour was. Anyway, I said to him, I doubt very much whether I can get back there, but I'll have a look without taking a radio just to see what happens. And it was impossible. He just couldn't have got there at all. At that stage, mortar shells were raining down into this little orchard where we happened to be. And the muck was spraying all over the place. It was a suicide mission. Anyway, we decided it was time to scarper. And old Lang Stacey, in fact, who'd been wounded and was later awarded the MM, he was loaded onto the front of a jeep with a stretcher. And they managed to rush him somewhere, exactly where I do not know, because I didn't see poor old Lau Stacey for another 40 years, when in fact Todd Sweeney appeared on This Is Your Life, an ITV programme on television. Then he turned up. And anyway, my instructions, you know, John Howard, he was still there, he said, right, off you go. And I probably had about five blokes with me, and we had to dash across the main road in Eskerville to get to the other side, which was heavily machine gunned, and clamber over a wall, which had a gate attached to it, I remember, which we managed to get over successfully, and bullets were in fact striking this gate as we, you know, got over the damn thing. And the next thing I remember really is that we finished up on the other side of this village called Haruvalette. Todd Sweeney was there, and who else was there? I don't quite remember, but I remember only too well that out of my company, D Company, we had to reform totally, and out of the original four platoons and headquarters platoon, we managed to form two platoons. So half the company, or more than half the company, had in fact either been killed, wounded, or some of them were captured, actually. One or two of the people in my platoon were captured, and one or two people in several of the other platoons were captured. When they were in ditches, I remember, on the other side of the farmhouse, and they were confronted by tanks. There was very little they could do with tanks, with rifles and Sten guns. They were captured. And we formed two platoons, one under Todd Sweeney, and by this time, David Wood, one of the platoon commanders, was wounded. Sandy Smith was wounded. Freddie Fox, I think, was wounded. No, I don't remember the name of the other platoon commander. But we got stuck in front of a Rouvalet, dug in, and we really did dig in this time. And it was quite amazing to us that, in fact, the Germans didn't, in fact, push their way right the way through, because they had the strength to do it. What it probably means is that we gave them a battering as well as they gave us a battering, and they decided enough was enough. We stuck there, I remember. We were stuck in that position, two platoons, for the next 24 hours. And
which day would this have been?
That was June the 6th was D-Day. June the 7th was the day we moved into Eskerville. So June the 7th was the day we got battered, well and truly battered, and as I say, finished up with two platoons. We had plenty of ammunition and plenty of weapons. At that stage, I was walking about with a Sten gun, which was the one I was issued with. But it's nice to have a Sten gun, but it's much nicer to have a rifle because it's got a much longer range. And so I had a rifle, and you found most of the blokes were walking about with rifles and Sten guns, or rifles and machine guns. In fact, some of them were walking about with MG-34s, the German machine gun, plus their ammunition. They were very heavily laden with arms by the time they finished on that particular day. We had a fairly uneventful night on June the 7th. We were prepared. I had my slit trench by the side of the road, which led out of a rouvalette, with, of course, a thick hedge in front of me. And I remember we tied plastic explosive, I think it was, with primers, onto a piece of cord, and draped it all the way across the road into my slit trench, so that if we did in fact have German tanks or armoured vehicles coming up along the road, we would pull the cord, and the Nobles 808, I think it was, the explosive we were using at the time.
What was the 808?
Nobles 808 explosive, I think that was the one we used. with the little primers stuck inside. And the idea was if the armoured vehicles came along, we would, in fact, from my trench, yank the cord across so that the plastic lay across the road. Been useful at night because they wouldn't have seen it, but I don't suppose German tanks or German armoured cars would, in fact, move along at night, but that we did. So we went through June the 7th, the night of June the 7th. From what I can remember, quite uneventful. We managed probably to get a couple of hours sleep. The next day, I think we had a Red Cross agreement with the Germans to come and pick up our dead. And we picked up quite a few, I think. Wally Parr and a Jeep. And I went along with Wally Parr to pick up the dead bodies. I remember the names of a lot of them. And strangely enough, we were not fired upon by the Germans at all while we were doing that. Presumably they were doing the same thing. We never did find out. We stayed in that position, I think, for a couple of days before anything really took shape in the way of action. I remember Todd Sweeney, he said, right, out on patrol. We're going to patrol up the road as far as the paratroops position is concerned. They were stuck in a big wood. And bring somebody with you. So I took with me the brain gunner, Glyn Roberts, and I think also Buck Reed. So four of us went off on this patrol, linked up with the paratroop position, which was probably 1,000 yards away, maybe a mile away. And started on our way back. In fact, we did a large circle. The idea was to do a large circle back to our positions. The patrol, of course, had been ordered by John Howard to find out what was happening. And just as we, in fact, left the paratroops position, the Germans sent in an armoured reconnaissance right onto our position, actually, with tanks and armoured troop carriers and the rest of it. And at the same time, their mortars opened fire. And I remember dashing through this orchard, another orchard, with mortar shells bursting all around us. And the four of us did, in fact, manage to get out of this orchard into thin scrubland, which hit us a bit. And we eventually settled down and regrouped, probably some 800 yards, I suppose, from my platoon position. And Todd Sweeney said, well, we've got to go back, find out what's happened. And, of course, we went back to our... eventually got back to our platoon positions. And there was nobody in our slit trenches at all. Our blokes had left their slit trenches. And the platoon headquarters had left their slit trenches. In fact, they'd all gone back, all pulled back. Because, in fact, armoured vehicles were coming on them, and that was not, in fact, the best place to be. But I do understand that that day, the battalion anti-tank guns, in fact, had repulsed that attack and had, in fact, knocked out quite a few German tanks. And that was one of the battles which went on. And, of course, this sort of thing went on for the next, well, 2.5 months, I suppose, until the 6th Airborne Division broke out of the Normandy bridgehead, when in fact the British Army broke out of the Normandy bridgehead, and little skirmishes all the time. And John Howard, of course, he was a great one for morale boosting and keeping the spirits of the lads up. And he would think nothing at all of getting a 6-pounder gun and yanking it through hedges and the rest of it at 6 o'clock in the morning and firing on German positions and pulling the thing out as quickly as possible. He would do this. He was very good on patrol. He would insist on patrols going out all the time. And so we had a hairy time, I suppose, for 2.5 months. And by the time I was wounded, sometime in August... August 1944, I was the last one left of my platoon, of the originals. The rest of them had either been killed, wounded, or captured, the lot. And I was the last one, in fact, to get wounded. I think I was the last one to get wounded out of my platoon. And
where and how did you get wounded?
It was the breakout from... in fact, we'd been stuck in Bomb Alley and all these places that we were defending at the time for 2.5 months. And eventually the... I don't know the strategies of war, but presumably the Americans were moving around fast on the right flank of the British Army. And the troops in front of us, the German troops in front of us, were pulling back. And it was decided that the 6th Airborne Division would move out. I think the first people who went were the Free Dutch. I think we had a squadron of Free Dutch tanks there. And I'm pretty certain I saw them go out first. And then my battalion started on the road. It was the road to... it finished up at Le Havre, eventually, but the way we used to do it was that you would advance along the road in file, one section on the left, one section on the right, well spaced out, and each company would take turns to lead, and each platoon would take turns to lead. And it meant that the front company... or the front platoon would in fact be moving along the road, and if there happened to be a crossing road or a cart track, then the leading platoon or the leading section, would in fact wander along this road to the right or to the left, or the cart track, for about 200 yards, settle down and cut it off, and then the next section would take the lead. And when the next section came upon a crossroad, it would in fact peel off, cut it off, and then the next section would in fact move through, take up the lead. So that, and as the battalion went through, the last man in the battalion went through, then the section which had turned off to the right or left to cut off those particular roads would in fact join the column again at the back. And it happened to be our luck that D Company were leading the battalion. My platoon was leading D Company, and my section was leading the platoon. When we came across this road on the right-hand side, and we had a new young officer was in charge of us at that stage, come out from England. I don't remember his name at all, but he told us to move 200 yards up the road. And I disagreed with him vehemently. I said, we only need to go up there 100 yards. He insisted we went up there 200 yards. Of course, there's ditches, of course, we could have gone along, but that would been rather foolish to go along ditches, because this is the place where anti-personnel mines and tyre busters and all that sort of thing were placed in the bottom of the ditches, and you only needed to tread on one of those, and that was your section gone, let alone yourself. And we prefer to walk along the top of the road. In other words, we didn't walk, we ran, crouched. One went forward, the other one stayed back, then the next one went forward and so forth. That's the way we did it. And lo and behold, we went probably 200 yards, much against my advice, and as soon as we settled down at 200 yards, the machine gun opened up, not far away, maybe 100 yards, maybe 150 yards. And the first Smacker Drew was the first one. He was killed. Smacker Drew was a corporal, although in my section at the time. And no, he wasn't in my section. He was in old Robert's section, that's right. There were two sections of us, that's right. Two sections of us came along there. And another chap, I forget his name, but he had his wrist smashed. And I must have caught ricochets, I think, because I was lying down, pointing in the right direction, and I caught one in the back. One skated across my neck and another one skated across my shoulder. And on the impact, all I felt was a massive electric shock right through my body. And the first thing I did was to roll down to the bottom of the ditch. I did that myself, and had a look at my flying smock to see, in fact, whether the bullet had come through. Not being satisfied with that, I lifted up the smock to make certain, once again, it hadn't come through. And then I was out. I was paralysed. And I suppose it's very quick, because it must have been within 2 minutes, 3 minutes, the medic, old Lawson, he's a nice bloke, old Lawson, older chap, little thin-faced chappy, knew his medics well. He was down there in the ditch and gave me a jab of morphia. That's right, morphia. And they yanked me out of there very quickly, because by this stage, of course, the German machine gun had disappeared. And strangely enough, as soon as I sort of come to, blokes of the other section told me they'd been round the other side of the field, round by the edge of this particular road, looking for the gunner. You know, they'd gone straight up there. There's no nonsense about it. And then I was loaded onto the front of a Jeep. John Howard was there. And he said, well, you'll soon be under a drop of scotch. No, I remember saying to him, no, I don't drink scotch, only beer. Loaded onto this Jeep. By this stage, I was getting a little woozy. And I finished up somewhere, I don't quite remember where, in a tent on the beaches. And by this time, we had English nurses across on the beaches. And I was mumbling something to one of these nurses, exactly what I don't know. But the next day, I don't quite know how I got there, I was on a hospital ship back to Southampton. And I don't remember too much about that trip. I was probably well doped up. And then on a hospital train, which finished up eventually in Leeds, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, I think. It seemed to be an interminable journey by train, but I suppose that's the state of the mind at the time.
Were you in much pain at that time?
Just null and dumb. I think I was well drugged up. That's my guess. But the bullet that in fact hit me skated along my spine for about 6 inches. Didn't go through, and in fact didn't affect the spinal cord at all. And I was in hospital about two months, I suppose, another month in convalescence, and no problems with it ever since. The scars on my neck and the scars on my shoulder have disappeared totally, and I was one of the lucky ones.